What is up? Welcome back to Big Fat Five, a podcast financially supported by Big Fat Snare Drum. My name is Ben Hilsinger, and this week's guest is Johnny B. Good. I've been following his Instagram account for a while now, and I'm really impressed by his nostalgic, retro-futuristic synth sounds and his vintage video game vibe. Paired with a clean, opaque color-infused aesthetic, it's beautiful in its minimalist approach. He's committed to his branding so strongly that he chooses to remain anonymous, creating a character and a whole world, really, to convey his art. It's great. He's a great guy. I loved his choices. And while he may not consider himself a drummer's drummer, he sees himself more as a producer, which I think is fabulous and a perspective we should all tap into more often. I hope you enjoy learning about the five records that shaped Johnny B. Good into the musician he is today. Cheers. What non-drummer has had the biggest impact on you as a drummer? And maybe you can say, Ben, I'm going to get to that in one of my Big Fat Five, so let's just move on. But do you have an answer?
Yeah, so I'm super into synthesizers. So that's kind of like one of my main things is just playing synth music. There's this guy that is on my list, actually, J3PO. He's, man, everything he does on the synthesizers are just so good and so tasteful. He does jazz and classical, but especially his synth-based tones is like, it's very Moogy, very bouncy. Everything I try to do, I try to mimic that. But he also programs drums, and he also gets all these different drummers, and it just goes together so well. The drums are like super crunchy and very compressed, very squashy. Man, the whole vibe of J3PO, that's kind of like my biggest non-drummer inspiration right now.
Hell yeah. And then in what ways do you, I mean, it seems like you have an endless treasure trove of inspirations you pull from, but in what ways do you actively seek out new sources of inspiration? Where do you turn?
You know what sounds crazy is social media actually plays a big part of how I digest and discover music. You know, there are a lot of negatives to social media, but for me, I'm just constantly discovering awesome musicians every day. You know, new musicians are just posting, you know, cool jams and covers and stuff. And what I'll do is I'll see that and I'll get inspired to kind of do my own version of that. Like, how can I, you know, do my thing with this? There's that, but then there's also, I think it's really important to have my space and my gear be inspirational and actually make me want to make music with it. Like, I just got this behind me. It's a MPC Key 37. It's my newest thing right now. My first kind of dive into the MPC world. And it sounds so silly, but I want to play it every day because there's so many cool things on it that inspire new sounds and new workflows, new ways of creating music. I feel like your gear really has to inspire you. We were just talking about that before the show too. It's almost like I need the gear to look cool just as much as it sounds cool for me to, you know, really want to make music with it.
What's that microphone that you, it's the white and kind of green one?
Yes, that is Oma mics. Yeah, they I found them on social media, on Instagram, and we just did a little content swap. They sent me a mic and I made some videos with it. What was really cool is when they reached out, they were like, hey, you know, we'd love to send you a mic. And I said, hey, could you actually do it in these colors? Because like I had this kind of mint teal white thing going on. Mm-hmm. And they said, absolutely. So they custom made this mic for me. It's a ribbon mic that I'll use for either an overhead or if I do like a two mic setup, I'll put a kick drum mic and then put that. I think they call it like a crotch mic, kind of like, yep, right above the bass drum, right? So like a lot of like the lo-fi stuff, I'll do that. But yeah, it looks just as cool as it sounds.
And it's a ribbon mic. Damn, I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a ribbon mic. And admittedly, I really don't know too much of the differences between like condenser and ribbon, but
I know it's more breakable. That's all I know.
Yeah, they said be very careful with it and keep it in its case when you're not using it. But they also said the ribbon mic is better for drums, better for overheads. So I said, let's do it. Let's do the ribbon. So yeah, it sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's, again, looks, sounds cool, but let's just hop into your Big Fat Five. So And you did say it's in chronological order, so we'll talk about when it was introduced to you and all that stuff. But the attributes of the actual album is Where the Light Is, and it's the John Mayer Live in Los Angeles. Of course, John Mayer, the release year is 2008. And the key track, and I'm assuming, like I always say, it's the whole record, but I always ask people to choose one, and it's I Don't Trust Myself with Loving You. And J.J. Johnson is the drummer.
Yeah. So this, I mean, I think I was like maybe 18 or 19 when I actually gave John Mayer a chance. You know, I was listening to a lot of like emo, My Chemical Romance, The Used, Taking Back Sunday. That was my jam. Really? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Man, so that was kind of like my, you know, my musical taste, you know, back then. I got this DVD for my birthday from a friend of mine. And I think this was around like when people would just kind of start uploading whole live performances to YouTube, but they'd be like really blurry, really low quality. So like you could either go watch a blurry version of this on YouTube or you'd have to go buy the DVD, you know? So I got the DVD for my birthday. I didn't really think John Mayer, like I was like, I'll keep listening to my pop punk stuff, but
sure. Pretty Boy. Who is this?
Yeah. Yeah. So I gave John Mayer a chance. I put it on. And honestly, this whole experience, the whole live performance really changed everything for me. I was playing a lot of guitar at the time, but what kind of hit me was the drums on this, especially this one song. This was kind of like when I first realized as a drummer, you can have two snares and use them both on the same song. And that made me really want to get more into drums, take drums more seriously, you know. So you have this song and John Mayer's kind of like riffing, he's kind of improvising, the drums come in and J.J. Johnson has this like really high cracky snare at the beginning and they're grooving and, you know, John Mayer kind of brings it down and then the actual song starts and J.J. does this fill right into the song and the snare is this deep, gushy, kind of like the beads are kind of loose. And that, just seeing that happen for the first time, got me so excited to learn more about drums. And actually, fast forward to today, I have adult money now and I can buy.
Congrats.
Thank you. Yeah. I bought my first like actual nice drum kit. Well, nice to me. It's the Yamaha custom hip kit. It's compact. So it's nice for a small studio. But I bought this kit because it comes with a snare and a snom. It has a low tom with the beads on it. And I was just so stoked to be able to use two different snares. I probably won't buy another snare anytime soon. So I was just so stoked that this kit came with both. So you have two different flavors. But yeah, so that's what kind of inspired me to start this drumming journey, was this particular song.
Hell yeah. Well, here you go. Here's I Don't Trust Myself with Loving You.
Right? Thank you.
you were saying you started off as a guitarist?
Yeah, guitar was my main thing for a very long time. Just doing the supporting singer-songwriters, country, church bands. Yeah, but it really wasn't until about a few years ago I started to take the drums seriously. I would dabble here and there and even do a few drum gigs, just super low-key. But it wasn't until about a year or two ago, that I could afford an actual drum kit and really want to just get more into it.
When you say take drums more seriously, do you mean more like you would practice rudiments more, or just you wanted to make more intentional vibes? If that's, I don't even know if I'm wording that question
yes.
right, but how are you approaching getting better at the drums, quote unquote?
Yeah, definitely the second one you were saying. Like, yeah. I really don't practice as much as I should. Yeah, I did a lot of like programming, a lot of sampling, a lot of finger drumming on like MIDI controllers. And I lived in apartments. I was on the road a lot. So that was just kind of like how I would play drums for my own stuff. Yeah, I just decided, look, I'm going to buy a drum kit. I'm going to do this, really go all in with the drums and teach myself how to do this. There's so many great drummers on Instagram that I just look up to. And I try to play like them. So I was like, it's time. We're doing this. We have a studio now. We're buying a drum kit.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of drummers, and I consider myself in this category, sometimes can't see the forest for the trees. We're so focused on, I need to get this rudiment at this tempo. It's like, sometimes you just want to zoom out and work on vibe. Like, are you fun to listen to? Do you have good creative ideas? Stop focusing on, I don't want to say the wrong things, but, you know, obviously the fact that I can't even formulate what I'm trying to say means how scatterbrained I am about it all. But I think maybe the people listening can relate that sometimes it's like I focus on the wrong things.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I take more of a, I guess, producer approach to drums and less of a choppy, more of a producer than a drummer, I guess.
Well, no. Hey, y'all. I wanted to talk to you about a drum I've recently received from Preston at Vessel Drum Co. It's an Ocean Patinaed 14x5.5 snare drum, and it's incredible. It's got a 1.5mm shell, brass shell, with 10 lugs, chrome over brass triple flange hoops, a Trick 3-position strainer, 42-strand wires. It's lovely, it's loud, and it cuts and records as beautiful as a piece of butter cake. And Preston, actually, this is why it's called the Ocean Patina, is he covers the shell with seaweed and then drops it in the ocean for a certain period of time. And then it patinas with all these crazy cool designs. And if you all remember, Preston was actually one of the first guests on the podcast. When I first started out, I didn't really know what the Big Fat Five format was going to be or if it was going to be even Big Fat Five at all. But I went to his garage, his you know, where he makes all of his drums. It was really cool. He walked me through. The episode is essentially from start to finish what happens with a drum. And it was a really fun episode. It's now archived at bigfatsnaredrum.com just because it doesn't fit the format of Big Fat Five. I want you to get back to the show. But go check it out. This drum is beautiful. And he actually let me use it on an Eve 6 tour. And I didn't keep it, and I regretted it ever since then, just because I was trying to pinch pennies at the time, and I just kept thinking about it. And so the opportunity to get it again was presented, and it is one of my favorite drums. So the Ocean Patinaed 14x5.5 snare drum, check it out, reach out to me, go to Vessel Drum Co. The Instagram's just at Vessel Drum Co. and check it out. It's amazing, it's beautiful, sounds great. Bye. Number two, let's go to, I haven't heard this album so long, and I also grew up loving this record, but the album is Songs About Jane. The artist is Maroon 5, release year is 2002. Key track is The Sung, and Ryan Dussick is the drummer?
Yeah, he was the drummer for this record, and I think they toured this record for a little bit, and then he quit, and then the other drummer joined in his place, Matt Flynn, and I think he's still the current drummer.
Okay.
Yeah. This album, every single song is so good. Like it's a great like road trip album. Like you're in a car with your friends, you throw this on, it has something for everybody. Like there's, you know what I mean? It's just, yeah. It's just, you know, the drums are great. The singer, like Adam Levine, you know, the lead singer, he's awesome. Everything is just so great about this album. This is kind of where I learned that playing in the pocket is more important and more and cooler than like chopping it up and like shredding on the drums. And this whole record, it makes the drums, it makes the pocket sound so good and so upfront and so important. This is kind of, yeah, what made me want to focus more on just playing to a click and just doing just a beat, just lock in to a click. Oh, and this song, The Sun, yeah, man, anytime I sit down to a kit, this is the groove I play.
Number three, the album is Come to Daddy, a great album name. The artist is Aphex Twin. Release year is 97. And if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure I saw a recent video where you played along to this song, right?
Yes.
Flim. And then, of course, the drummer is Aphex Twin. He does it all. But yeah, take it away. Then we'll listen to some Flim.
I had no idea this album was called Come to Daddy. I don't know much of Aphex Twin's discography. It's really just this one song that spoke to me. And like you were saying, yeah, I did a cover of this. So this is kind of where like YouTube and Instagram started to impact the way I discover new music and get influenced by new musicians. I found this band on YouTube called Pimpernel. You ever heard those guys?
No.
Dude, so it's a dubstep band. It's a band that plays like Skrillex and like all these like dubstep, but it's guitar and it's bass. Nathan Navarro is on bass for this. He has the thumb thing on where he does the bass wobble thing.
Okay.
But and then they have keys and drums. So it's like a full setup band, but they're playing dubstep. And it's just, man, that like just seeing that electronic music can be played with acoustic instruments, I thought that was so cool. But the keys player and the drummer did a cover of Flim by Aphex Twin. And it's the drummer and he's just doing the chill drum and bass thing, you know, just that fast drumming thing. And the keys are doing this beautiful kind of Rhodes kind of sparkly, twinkly vibe. And it's just them two. And that I still chase that sound today. I still try to like get these twinkly vibes with the fast kind of drum and bass thing. So that was my first intro to Aphex Twin. It wasn't Aphex Twin. It was these two guys. And I tried to find the YouTube video. I don't think it's up anymore, but there's still videos of Pimpernel doing Skrillex covers and stuff. But since I saw that, it was on my bucket list to get good enough at the drums where I could do my own cover of this. And just like last year, I felt confident enough with my drum playing to try to do the song justice. And I set up my OP1, which is this little synthesizer. Honestly, it's my favorite thing in the world. It does everything, like the sampling, the synths, the looping.
I've wanted to mess with one, yeah.
Oh,
It's just out of the price point for an impulse buy for me. But I think I might still do it because so many people I look up to mess around with it.
Yeah, it went from like this kind of underground thing to this like luxury thing. I'm not a fan of what they did with the branding at all. Cause yeah, it's now out of everyone's price range. But when it was like $800, I snagged one. It's kind of like my go-to synth for anything. I always start with the OP1. But I looped the melody of Flim in the OP1. I have it set up next to my kit and I just filmed myself playing it over and over and over. And I finally got a take I liked. I'm like, okay, this is the one, this is the take. And I just mixed the hell out of it and really tried to get the squashy, you know, saturated kind of filtered drums. There's not a lot of low end, not a lot of high end. It's just very kind of like telephone sounding. But I did that and I posted it. And that's probably the video I'm the most proud of to this day.
Hell yeah.
is that. Because it was just such a bucket list thing for me to achieve, just to try to do the song justice. But that was my intro to electronic music.
So number four, and this is a YouTube video that I will drop in the show notes because I do want people to be able to visualize what we're about to talk about. So maybe pause and go check it out and then you can come back and listen to it. But it is a single release on YouTube. The artist is Sean Wasabi. The release here is 2015. The video is him playing Marble Soda. And of course, the drummer slash programmer finger drummer is Sean Wasabi. So yeah, take it away and then we'll listen to some.
Yeah, so Sean Wasabi, he's probably the most influential for me when it comes to my Johnny B. Goode sound palette and my branding and just the whole vibe. I owe all to Sean Wasabi, honestly.
Hell yeah.
He's an electronic artist, but he's also a classical musician, crazy talented. But what he does is he has this MIDI controller. It's called the MIDI Fighter 64. They have like a 16 pad version, but they made him a 64 pad version to do things like this. Every single button is a different sample and he's playing it. And they're like every single beat, every bar, every measure, there's something going on. There's a new sample. There's something going on. It's very crazy, very hyper. But to this day, it's like his branding, the well-lit videos, the white MIDI controller, the pink, the mint, the bubbly poppy anime vibes, like that has a huge influence on what I try to do every day with my Johnny B. Goode thing. And his music videos where he's not playing the MIDI controller, he has like these little characters and there's this whole story behind all these songs. So that kind of inspired me. I put out this album called Be Good Farm. And I made up this whole lore behind it. And I made this little map where, like, you know how like you play Zelda and you open up the map, there's the little locations. Mm-hmm. Well, like every location on this little map I made is a song on the album. There's like Mocha Beach, you know, there's, you know, so like different locations. And I took up pixel art to do that, to draw my own little Johnny B. Goode character, to draw this little adventure map and to do my album covers. But, I just love having this whole kind of backstory behind what you do. You know, like there's characters, there's a theme, there's a story. I got all of those ideas from him, from Sean Wasabi. So I would not be here without Sean Wasabi.
Hell yeah. Well, let's listen to it. And then, yeah, you kind of answered it, but I did want to talk about your branding and the decision to be a faceless brand. And so, but let's listen to some Sean Wasabi first. So here we go.
Please enjoy it.
We'll be right back. Everyone go watch that, because I was just like, I got mesmerized. It's very visually stimulating for sure.
Yeah, man. And the little lights on the pad. So this song is only on YouTube. It was on Instagram. I mean, it was on Spotify for a little while, but I think you have to take it down because there's so many samples from other songs in it.
Yeah.
But if you want to listen to an album that's just like this, he has an album called Mango Tail. I mean, that album would just make you happy. It'll make you have a great day. But but he's like a great musician too. And he does all this programming stuff. And you can really tell in his music, like his chord choices and his melodies, his bass playing. This is my idol pretty much.
I can see where you were inspired by this for sure. But again, thanks, you do your own thing for sure.
Thanks, man.
But all right. So yeah, now we're going to go to you teased it a little bit, but this is the artist J3PO. The album Small Plates, release years 2019. And the key track is Intenser featuring Ateller.
I think it's Ateller.
Ateller. All right. So then the drummer's Ateller. Take it away. And then we'll listen to some Intenser.
Yeah, this is kind of where I'm at now with my musicianship and the kind of music I want to be making. Well, first of all, this whole album, everything about it is what I try to sound like now. It's the synthesizers, it's the crunchy drums, especially Ateller, especially on this song. He's on Instagram, and I discovered J3PO through this drummer, through Ateller. Mm-hmm. And what I learned from him was the J. Dilla thing, the kind of lazy but rushed hi-hat thing, and how to play that on drums and not just programming it in. And he kind of does that on this song, the cut where you swing the and, you know, on with the hi-hats. So it's like a one and two and three and four, but everything else is kind of straight, you know. Mm-hmm. The snare is a tick rushed. So you kind of get the flam with the snare and the hi-hat. I think that's the J. Dilla secret thing. Yeah, everything on this album, everything that J3PO does, his synth-based thing, it's very bouncy. He's a Moog Sub 37, and I got the Sub 25. It's just kind of a smaller version of it without all the bells and whistles, just a straight, you know, solid synth bass from Moog, which is all I needed. I didn't want anything crazy. But so these are all the tones I try to get and all the flavors, you know, crunchy drums, bouncy synth bass. Yeah, and J3PO too, crazy musician. He's got stuff out. He's got there's a plugin called EXO by XLN Audio, and he has a whole sample pack in that plugin. The whole plugin is drum samples. I don't know if you've ever seen that. It looks beautiful, the plugin. It's all these little dots on the screen, and you can drag your mouse over the dots, and every dot is a sample. You can just pick your sample. But they have these musicians make sample packs just for that plugin, and J3PO has a sample pack in here, and I'm always using his drums, his drum sounds, if I don't want to do the drums myself, for if I'm doing just like a synth video for someone. But this is where I'm at now. This is what I try to sound like whenever I try to play music.
Hell yeah. Well, when is the Johnny B. Goode sample pack from EXO coming out?
I haven't talked to EXO about that, but I do have a Johnny B. Goode sample pack that is out. That is for free. I released it through BandLab.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, BandLab's actually pretty awesome. I was a little skeptical at first, but their samples are probably up there with like Splice, if you download like Splice samples.
Sure.
All the same vibes. But yeah, I make like white label sample packs for BandLab, where like I just make them as a ghost producer and they release it under BandLab. I've done a few things like that with them, but I also have my Johnny B. Goode sample pack, which is all the kind of, you know, all the bubbly synthesizer, 8-bit retro gaming. Even the picture for the sample pack is my little character, you know, in the clouds with like, you know, it looks like you're playing like a level on a video game. But anyway, yeah, so there is a free sample pack out there if you want some Johnny B. Goode sounds.
I'll link it all. Yeah. So whoever's listening to this, go just look at your app and you'll be able to go there. But here is Intenser. Here you go. So when you started playing drums like this, or trying to emulate this, how long did it take you to convince yourself it sounded good? Like at first, were you like, is this sound cool or is this just shit? Like, what am I doing? I've never gone down this rabbit hole because I'm worried I'd be like, I don't know if this is good or if it's horrible.
I know. Yeah. Well, you know, playing it live is so different than like programming it in and knowing, because I used to do a lot of programming. So I kind of knew what I wanted to sound like. I knew how to quantize the MIDI notes to make it have that feel, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So when I tried to play it on the kit, it sounded awful. And I still don't really have it dialed in that well.
But, I think you sound great, so.
Thanks, man. And so, yeah, what I did, though, is whenever I wasn't at the drums, I'd have my sticks and practice on a pillow or the couch and practice the hi-hat moves, because that's really the vibe. It's just it's the rushed ands, you know? So I would just keep practicing that and then try to translate that to the kit. But as far as drum tones go, lots and lots of processing. I'll do like 20 takes and then finally settle on a take. And okay, I think I can do something with that. And it's a lot of saturation. I throw a lot of plugins at it. The plugin I use the most on these is the RC20. It's the plugin that does everything. The saturation, the warbly, the reverb, also by XLN Audio. That's the vibe, is the RC20.
Interesting. Yeah, I was going to say, could you give away any of your secrets? And I was going to totally respect it if you're like, no.
Yeah, no. My secret is my acoustic drums by themselves sound like crap. And I rely very, very heavily on my producing and my mixing and trying to dial that in. You know, like we were talking about before, I like when things look nice and to the detriment of it sounding nice. So my room isn't really that treated. There's not a lot of acoustic. It's a little reverby. So I put a lot of transient shapers on my snare, on my hat, so you don't get that echo, and a lot of hard gates too. And every now and then too, I'll do a kick drum replacement because I still haven't figured out how to dial in my kick drum without there being a porthole in the backside. So that's like my last ditch effort. Like if the tick was great, but my kick just doesn't sound good, I'll blend in like a kick sample with it just to give it that attack.
I do that. I have a space in North Hollywood where I live, and it's a 10x10 lockout, you know? And so like the kick never sounds amazing. And I don't think it's cheating at all. It's like, it really is me playing. It's my damn transient. Just I'm going to make it sound a little different. It's fine.
That's right. That's right. And I'll tell you what makes me the most nervous is I just did this thing with Universal Audio. They sent me some mics for my drums. I was like, all right, we are not doing any drum replacements. We have to make this sound good. Like we are showing off the mics, you know?
Sure.
That made me a little nervous, but I think we got there. Definitely a lot of transient shapers for the kick.
Sure. Sure. Awesome. Well, that's your top five. And we do have a few honorable mentions. Traveler. There's also Ryan James Carr. I mean, maybe a few of them, and then I'll let you get back to creating awesome stuff.
Thanks, man. Yeah, all these honorable mentions. Ryan James Carr, killer producer, man. Oh my God, he just played drums for was it Usher? His Tiny Desk.
Oh really? Concert. Okay, cool.
Yeah, and I think he like produced helped produce the arrangements for the Tiny Desk concert for Usher. Killer producer, killer drummer. Another mention is Steezo. He's like another faceless account. He's got five OP1s. It's like a wall of OP1s linked
together. And a hedge fund, sounds like it. Jesus, right? That's expensive.
Yeah. I, my favorite thing to tell people is like he had five OP1s before any of us had one. Like he's the original OP1 player.
Yeah.
And he makes it sound so good. His signature thing is to put the sample of Shia LaBeouf saying the "just do it," you know, that's his whole thing. So like if you ever come across it, he plays that sample and then he drops his beat. I just think it's so cool to have like a thing, you know. But I think that's it, man. I'm like so honored to be on this show. Like I was so surprised when you asked me to come on, because I'm still very new to the drumming world. So I really appreciate you reaching out, and this was awesome.
Well, ditto, man. And I think, you know, your perspective on a lot of stuff is something that I think drummers, even if they don't produce and do synth stuff, I think it's still something people should look into and be inspired by. So you're a classic example of being inspired by something and then making it your own and thriving. So I actually kind of wore the colors I'm wearing. You can't see people, but I tried to go like, you know, opaque your vibes. So
yeah, you got like the pink and you got the teal hat. Man,
I tried.
I appreciate it.
All right, today's big fat favorite is from Axel Coe. I love his drumming, and he works with Homes at Night and Zach Bryan, does a bunch of recording out of his studio in Nashville. But the album is Bright Size Life. The release year is 1976. The artist is Pat Metheny, and the song choice is the titular track, Bright Size Life, and the drummer is Bob Moses. So here is what Axel had to say. This record was introduced to me by my middle school band director. At the time, I couldn't comprehend exactly what was happening on the track. Bob Moses, the drummer, has an incredible ability to phrase melodically and often over the bar line. I didn't fully understand this then, but I knew it was something I wanted to learn. Bob Moses, in my opinion, is one of the most underrated jazz drummers. He has an incredible amount of facility and ideas. This track opened my eyes to the importance of right-hand phrasing, and my feel and identity as a player come from how I present my right hand. Most of the music I play and record these days is backbeat-oriented, and while I'm not trying to access as much of the nuances as I would if I was playing with Pat Metheny, controlling my right hand has been an invaluable skill, even something as simple as being aware of the cymbal volume in a pop country session. This track started me on my journey of control. So here is Bright Size Life by Pat Metheny. The show. If you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, do that. It helps more people find the show, so it'll get bigger and better, and hopefully I'll have a chance to sell out one day. But you'll be an OG listener that can brag to all your friends. Anyways, why don't you go and check us out at bigfatsnaredrum.com and follow us on all the socials. Just search for Big Fat Snare Drum and you will find us. The show is edited in part using Isotope RX Audio Editor. It's amazing, so go check that out at isotope.com. And thanks again to Gunnar Olson for the theme music. Bye.